When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
This crowd rises to its feet. Vaccaro slammed it home. Garland left wing, three ball. Perfect. Garland went to the lane, locked the Mobley. Pow! And Allen blocked the shot at the rim. Pow! With the left hand and a foul.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Chase Down is presented by Fubo, the official streaming partner of the Cavs. Watch over 350 channels of live sports and TV, including Bally Sports Ohio, without cable. There's no cost and no commitment. Try for free at FuboTV.com/Cavs. Since we last recorded, the Cleveland Cavaliers have gone 1-1 with a disappointing loss to the Philadelphia 76ers, as well as a win over the Washington Wizards. Joining me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
Doing good, buddy. Just got off a guest appearance on Across the Cavs with Zach Weiss. I think that pod should be posted in the next day or two. So, yeah, we're double potting tonight, baby. We're recycling takes tonight, baby.
As if we don't repeat ourselves enough already.
Doesn't sound like us.
No, not at all. Obviously, nice to get a win over the Wizards tonight. Donovan Mitchell making his return to the lineup. He fit right in. You know, there were times where he was looking a little hesitant, doesn't seem to be in the same groove, and that has been the story for the Cavs across the board. As you look at how they've performed after the All-Star break, we talked about it, as you mentioned, a little bit before, but you know, really, they haven't found their groove since the win over Toronto. It seemed like they had a quality win in Toronto, a place where they never go and look good. And then after that, you know, they just haven't had the same groove. And some of that is understandable with the All-Star break. Some of it is typical when you have a team that goes on an extended winning streak. Usually there's a little bit of a crash and a little bit of a come down, or as Donovan Mitchell said, you know, fighting the urge to become complacent with success, especially when you've given yourself a little bit of a breathing room in the Eastern Conference. But things are going to get more difficult here, and being able to bank one of these wins and hopefully, you know, shake off some of the rust and find a little bit of a rhythm on the offensive end. I think that's, it's good to see. I think we're both hoping that that's going to be the case and things will be a little bit smoother moving forward.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's like crazy loved how the team's played since February 12th. You know, Philly's 3-7 in their last 10, two of the three wins were against us. You know, you squeak out a win at home right before the break against a pretty rough Chicago team right now. And obviously, the Orlando loss, you know, it's just one of those in the muck kind of games that, you know, you thought the team had left behind. And but, you know, to your point, like, I do think it's natural to have a come down. You know, like, would you rather have this 2-3 stretch after winning 18 out of 20? Or would you have rather just, you know, sprinkled those losses in and had it a little bit more evenly distributed? You know, it's the ledger remains the same no matter what. And I'd rather see a team that shows they can win 18 out of 20, you know. And you know, I care much more about ceilings with this group. So, and I think the other thing you said that is right here is you banked a win. And like banking wins right now is just important. The schedule is really, really, really tough. Coming up, you know, they have versus Dallas, back to back at Chicago, then one day off, then at Detroit, then a day off, then home against the Knicks, home against the Celtics, heading to Atlanta on the back to back, then home against the T-Wolves. Like, that's a brutal stretch. And like, those are the kind of stretches where, you know, if you had lost your third game in a row, you start looking at the, you start standings watching, and you start going, did we just lose the two seed in this three games? And so keeping whatever buffer you can is just important. And like, was tonight's win gorgeous? No. I think there were plenty of nits to pick, but like, ultimately it's a win, and you got to win games. Like, great regular season teams just win, even when they don't play well. The Cavs happened to have a 2-month stretch where they didn't ever not play well. Yeah. So I think our curve is a little thrown. But this is an encouraging win. I'm glad that and I liked their process late too. I think that's also important to say. I like that Darius took 4 straight threes on 4 straight possessions down the stretch to kind of try to hit that knockout blow. I thought the team's got impulse has been to be a little too grindy the last few games, where they want to slowly squeeze the life out of you. Throwing a few haymakers is important. And I thought they did a good job of that. So ultimately just glad to bank the win.
Yeah. And, you know, it was nice to see those runs occurring with Darius, Donovan, Mobley, and Allen on the court too. And I think a big part of those runs that they were able to go on was increasing the pace, getting out and running, executing quicker. And the thing I like too, like, both these last two games, Darius has had these stretches in the third quarter where, you know, the Cavs go out and they make a run where he assists on like 3, 4, 5 buckets in a row. Obviously, you know, tonight, plus 22, kind of speaks for itself that the Cavs played good basketball when he was on the court, even though I didn't think it was as good as his two previous games on the whole, although I did like how he finished it. But I like the fact that, you know, he's going out there, he's assisting, but then he doesn't fall into that trap of, okay, I'm not shooting it well. I'm getting it going as a playmaker. I'm just going to keep, you know, running pick and roll. I'm going to keep, you know, dishing it off and kind of let that be my impact. He went out there and took the shots himself. And when the fourth quarter started for Washington to go on the run and erase the Cavs lead and then take a 6-point lead, and for Darius to go out there in that moment and hit those two back-to-back threes and keep being assertive, that was really, really encouraging to see, because I still think he's a ways away. I haven't been like terribly thrilled with any of his performances in these games, just because, you know, he's held to a higher standard. Like, I have very, very high expectations for him. And I think the Darius that we're going to need in order to achieve our goals this season is a lot better than this. But it's starting to get back to, you know, a Darius I recognize more, where the impact is going to be there. All three of these games, they've won his minutes on the quarter. I think Philly made it -1 with 2 late free throws or something like that. But on the whole, he's been productive when he's been out there. I just noticed little things like him, you know, earlier in the season, I feel like very frequently he was looking to draw contact a little more than he should, really trying to force the issue and get to the free throw line. Now it feels like the opposite, where a lot of his movements on the court seem to be to avoid contact, and that's normal, but that's also not how you should be playing if you're going to be as aggressive as you need to be, right? So I think it's all part of a process, but it was nice to see, you know, these small breakthroughs, those high water marks that indicate, okay, you know, he's getting back towards the player that we recognize.
Yeah, I mean, just 9 3-point attempts. You know, he took a few more off the dribble than I'd necessarily love to see, in terms of, like, you know, on possessions where he's dribbling 8, 9, 10 times before he shoots. But still, like, the volume is what we've been begging for. The volume, you know, it's funny. It felt like such a groundbreaking night for him from three, and he shot 33%, which is about what he's at for the season. but the volume just goes such a long way there, you know? And, like, those are the kind of, like, we've always felt like that, the 3-point volume and being that ultimate sniper is kind of what is the tipping point that makes him matchup proof, that can make him work against anyone. Yeah. And so seeing him do that, even with mixed results, seeing that he didn't stop taking the threes was encouraging. Some of the playmaking was really good. He had a few, dime passes. And anecdotally, I don't know if this is true or not, I just felt like he had less of the dumps that like were at Evan's knees or Jared's knees.
Yeah.
Where it's like they just weren't going to have a good shot. Like, the Wizards aren't exactly the stoutest defensive team, so this certainly helps. But on some of those Nash wraparounds, he was doing the extra beat and shoveling it into their chest and not having to take a weird angle just to get it to them where they would have to go gather it. So a good Darius game. Again, I just haven't, despite not being crazy efficient as a scorer, I liked the process better. But again, this is a guy we're used to being great, or maybe, I guess depending on your perspective on what great is, I would say great being, an all-star level point guard. And we haven't quite seen that yet. And I just think it's just such an uphill climb to get there, when you just haven't been able to get any consistency. And like, I do think that's the one spot where guys with smaller frames like Darius, like, that's the one thing that sucks is you do lose some margin for error,
Yeah.
When you're LeBron and you're not quite right, you just have more physical things to lean on. It's like, okay, I'm just going to do this until I'm back, Darius, I feel like, has just to work through it a little bit more. And it might feel a little bit more noticeable. Does that make sense? Is that a stupid take?
No, it makes sense. And, I think it's important to remember, even though we are in the stretch run of the season, there is still a whole lot of season left, right? Like Darius's last 13 games prior to him, breaking his jaw were very productive. But the ones that we remembered prior to that, like he had only played 20 games, I believe, or around that when the jaw injury happened. There's still 26 games left of the season, right? Like it's more than the 14 that he missed, and there's a lot of time to kind of get things right. And like, I want things to turn around quickly so that you can start stacking successes and building off of, okay, we've now got Darius back to himself. Then you can kind of reach the next benchmark of integrating him into what we want to do offensively on the whole, and then building upon that, because I'm sure there's a whole lot of things that this coaching staff wanted to do on both ends of the court that they haven't been able to, because there's been so many guys in and out of the lineup. They haven't been able to, develop the sets upon sets upon sets that you need to have. So I think there is a large amount of season left, but I think everything that you said made sense. And you just worry that, you eventually run out of time, right? Like that's my biggest fear, is that you run out of time to get into a rhythm, and all of a sudden all context goes out the window, because all that matters is your success in the postseason, right? So there is a lot of time left, but even in this game, I think when we get the best version of Darius, it's going to be more of what we saw in the fourth quarter, where he's pulling up and taking those threes in transition. In the first half, even though the three-point volume was there for this game, there were still times where, it wasn't a quick trigger, instant release. Oh my goodness, like I have 5 feet of space, I'm taking this without a doubt. It's putting the ball on the floor, it's making other decisions, and then, all right, the defense managed to reset, I'm going to take a step back three. I think the best version of the Cavs as a whole, but in this instance, Darius, is taking those quick trigger threes. Like I think when you look at the change in three-point volume for the Cavs since the All-Star break, it's been guys passing up threes, pump faking, not really having the same confidence to just let it fly like they did prior to the break. Because as much as people are looking at these three games and saying, what happened to the three-point volume? Is it Mobley and Garland being back? No, we had 9-10 games of them still taking a lot of threes after they returned. This is just a shift that we have seen since the break. And I think the biggest thing is guys just getting more confident and collectively being quicker on the trigger to get that volume back up there.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. And ultimately, I think you're right about kind of the runway and how you just want to see it click now so you know it's going to click. You know, like I think it's a little bit of impatience and a little bit of little bit of angst, you know, like that's the, I think ultimately that's what it comes down to with him. And that's ultimately what we want to see for everyone who is kind of underneath our expected standard. Like, we want to see a guy like Max Strus find that jumper again and go on a month or a 2 month stretch where he just can't freaking miss and is taking crazy volume. Here's a little stat for you. December, Max was taking 9.7 threes per game. In January and February, he's down to 5. Those are the kind of volume drop-offs that you want to see, and the percentages have just continued to collapse. Down to, he's really heavy. I mean, he's at 33% for the year. Same with Darius. So, these are guys that you just expect to be doing better. I do think there is some angst with regards to the fact that earlier in the year and during the hot stretch and during the first few games when they came back, what we saw was elite process, mediocre offensive results.
Yeah.
Last few games, I think the process has gotten worse. And like, you can get away with that against, you know, a team like Washington where you can just mash them with your bigs because they're so small now ever since trading away Gafford. And, you know, they didn't even have Denny out there to, you know, be a big wing. But like, I'm a little concerned that there's been a little backslide there. To only get up 32 on a night where Darius takes 9 tells me that you just weren't generating a lot.
Yeah.
And maybe that's a little bit more of the too big thing, but I just kind of don't think that. I think that is a convenient explanation, but I don't think it is necessarily reflective of the truth.
Yeah, and especially when you do factor in that they continue to get that 3-point volume up prior to the break. Like, the Philly and Chicago games weren't great, but they still got up 37 threes in both of those games, right? And Mobley was out there playing 28 minutes. I just don't think... I think he played 28 again tonight. I don't think the change of him going from 28 to 31 minutes explains the difference in 3-point volume there. I think the thing that I like about it, I agree that it's concerning and it's something that I've got my eye on. The thing that I like is in the past, you and I would sit here and we'd theorize, okay, like, who is responsible for things like this, right? Like, when it came to pace, when it came to the shot profile that the Cavs had, I think we have enough sample size of what the coaching staff wants, how the team wants to play. You know, we would hear all the time, like when Dean's talking about, yeah, I'm taking a lot of threes because if I pass one up, everybody gets on me. That type of accountability, I think, is what they need to get back to, because we know what the coaching staff wants from them. We know what the players should be doing out there. It's just one of those things where, you know, you fall into those habits, or maybe you look at the Philly game and you shoot 29% from three and, hey, you know, the shot's not falling. Let's get away from it a little bit. When, you know, making decisions quicker, not pausing, not having those record scratches, that's going to lead to more open shots. And then you just have to kind of trust the process from there. Like, they're always going to have a healthy diet of those paint touches, of, you know, pick and roll offense, the cuts to the basket. Like, they have so many smart players. You're going to get those good shots on the interior to offset whatever 3-point variance you have, but you need to be making those quick decisions. You need to have that momentum with the ball. And I think the Cavs will get back to it. I'm confident, because this is a team that has high expectations for themselves and we've seen them right the ship. But I know I've made this point before, but in a lot of ways, an NBA season is very similar to an NBA game, where there are runs and you just don't want it to be an 18-point run, right, for the other team. You want to, every single time you go into a funk, you go back to your good habits, you dig deep, you try to minimize the bleeding, and you try to respond with a run of your own. I think right now the Cavs are in one of those ruts in a game, and it's just going to be a matter of, what will it take for them to reflip the switch, to rediscover that edge for the regular season, and go out there and play what we know to be the desired version of Cleveland Cavaliers basketball?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And some of it is just kind of going that extra mile, you know? Like, some of it is just kind of something that we talked a lot about this year is during that stretch is, you know, they were the best or the second best rebounding team in the league. And, you know, those kind of extra plays just mean a whole lot. And like, I think that's where I want to give a lot of credit to a guy like Caris LeVert, who had 12 boards tonight.
Mm.
And a lot of those on real, like, dig, like, Cavs got a switch or, you know, help had to go and Caris was out there, like, digging into a guy like, you know, Rashawn Holmes or Kuzma or Bagley to just pop him off, like, you know, that 1 or 2 feet of space where the, otherwise it's an easy putback. I thought Caris was great tonight. He's had a rough go for the last week or so, but like he kind of feels like the player who like succeeds or fails on his own terms more than anyone else. You know,
like it's that. Like
he's
You're
either
right.
he's either got it or he doesn't. You know, and like when he has it, it's just such a boon for the team, especially on a night where Donnie is clearly reacclimating. You know, has a very quiet night. In terms of volume and, you know, just not playing a crazy aggressive game. You know, he only takes 10 shots, you know, 6 of those from 3, 5 assists to 3 turnovers, has 5 fouls.
Yeah.
You know, it just kind of isn't it his best? Like,
yeah,
an important night for Caris to be good. And, you know, 8 assists to 0 turnovers. He has more like 8 assists, 0 turnover games than any like non-point guard I've ever seen.
Yeah.
and it was cool to see, cause you know, he just, you know, he hit the big three when the jumper has really been abandoning him as of late. Just thought he had a really nice game in the margins and, ultimately was really important for them.
Yeah. And when you look at the Cavs over this stretch, like the success of the bench has been one of the biggest stories. And it's been one of the reasons why they've had as much success as they have. And Caris LeVert is a massive part of that equation. And you look at the last two games prior to this, like him being that cold was a big, big difference maker, right? Like that made things tough for them because they just need that shot creation so desperately. But I think when you look at the season on the whole, the impact that Caris LeVert has consistently had off of the bench has been one of the biggest difference makers for the Cavs. Like his chemistry with the big men, his ability to run a pick and roll, his commitment to the glass.
Has he
right?
been a like, better cutter this year to you? I think he has.
I think he has too. I think he's become more comfortable in the system, and you can see why the coaches and teammates love him because he's a sponge and he continues to add things to his game. You know, some games the shot won't fall, but the fact that he commits himself on the defensive end on a night-in basis, that makes such a big difference. And, you know, I think he should absolutely be in the running for Sixth Man of the Year. I think he has been impactful on both ends of the court and giving the Cavs, you know, that vital boost from the bench, that vital support that we get from Zoom is just like Caris LeVert. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, "We are going to give women meaningful beauty." And I said, "That's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life."
Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Not my best segue, but it was still pretty good.
It's fine. I was fine with it. Can we talk about rotations, Justin? can we talk about rotations?
Go for it, buddy.
I'm going to go to the... It's not a mailbag, buddy, but I'm going to go to the chat. Vincent Isaac asks, hey, fellas, would like to hear your thoughts on the amazing starting lineup when DG and Evan were out, only playing 17 minutes together in 11 games since their returns. This is head-scratching. I get that they won't start together anymore, but that lineup should still be getting extended run together every game. To basically not play it at all anymore is crazy to me.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's an interesting point because, you know, that lineup was so successful. And I think when you start to kind of mix and match personnel, one of the things that I've definitely noticed is they do like the pairing of Caris LeVert and Donovan Mitchell together at times. I think that's kind of been one of the main culprits. Whereas if you're pairing George Niang with Evan Mobley and Darius Garland, you're going to want Isaac Okoro out there. You're going to want to insulate that lineup a little bit. So I do think that I'd like to see a little bit more of it just because it had been so successful. There was such good chemistry in there. But I can also understand as you're mixing and matching lineups, like it's a lot easier when you have that five and then you're just kind of slotting in, you know, three, four guys off of the bench kind of within that rotation. And then you go back to it as a starting lineup. When you have Isaac Okoro, when you have Dean Wade coming in off the bench, unless you're making that your first sub of the game, it's really hard to get to that lineup, right? Like you'd almost have to have Dean and Isaac be the guys taking Darius and Mobley off the court in order to get that lineup some burn. But we also know that Caris LeVert is going to be one of those first subs off the bench. So I would like to see them go to it a little bit more just because it did have success. But I also understand the roster constraints. And again, I would encourage people to go in like a rotation builder and try to tinker with how you would do it. Carter, it's one of the best exercises you've kind of got me onto doing just to try to think things through because it just gives you an appreciation for how difficult some of those rotation mixing and matchings can be from a coaching staff standpoint.
Yeah, and I think, you know, so first off, yes, everyone should try. Like if you have the time, it's tough, and especially tough with 10 minutes, and especially tough if you hold yourself to the rule that you should expect the game to be competitive and that your starters are going to, your best player is going to play 36, 37 minutes. Mm-hmm. Cause like on a night like tonight, the game was just not put to bed. So Donovan had to go play 36. Jared had to go play 37. Like you can like it's the number one thing I see every time anyone does just kind of play with like a minutes allocation is I'll see them immediately put the best player at like 31 minutes. I'm like, well, that's not how the NBA works, buddy. Like, yeah. Look at any team. Their best players are playing 35.
And that was the criticism of the Bud Bucks too, right? Was that, hey, you're just playing Giannis 31 minutes. And when he gets to the playoffs, he's not in a condition to go to that, you know, 38 minute threshold that these guys need to get to. Like you can't just flip that switch. Like guys need to go out there and play. And like I'll do 34. Like usually when I'm playing around with those tools, I'll do 34 because I think that is probably like most fair, but you're right. It gets damn near impossible when you get
it gets really hard. And I think the other thing that you see is and you're seeing it is you can throw, you know, Sam Merrill 8 minutes on your spreadsheet, but then you watch the game and you go, oh man, you only had 2 4-minute shifts or 1 6-minute shift, and that's hard. That's hard. Just excuse me, blowing a tire / burping. That's hard to succeed in that construct. To that point, like it's when you're playing your starters the first 5 6 minutes of each half and the last 6 minutes of the game, that's, you know, that's 18 right there. And it just gets a lot harder to get to that starting lineup. Now, with that said, I think Vincent's onto something here, buddy. I think that however, if you're going to be onto something there and you want to give that fivesome of Donovan, Isaac, Max, Dean, and Jarrett minutes, you're going to have to really start cutting some other guys' minutes now that Darius and Evan are back. because the reality is you're not cutting Darius and Evans minutes. So if you're going to make find time to make that lineup work, it's going to be harder to get Sam Merrill onto the floor at all. It's going to be harder to get George Niang his run. It's going to be harder to get Caris LeVert his run without running out lineups that need a lot of insulation elsewhere. So, like, I'm not saying it's impossible, but I'm saying those kind of decisions probably don't come without consequences. And it's really hard until you're actually mapping out the rotations to see those consequences. But, like, yeah, like, Vincent, I agree with you. I want to see more of that lineup because I think they're really, really good. They play really, really well together. But, like, once you start mapping it out, I think it's really easy to miss the collateral damage. And you know, that's just the challenge that JB's going to have. And I can't help but wonder, Justin, if he's going to go back down to nine guys and just that ninth spot in the rotation is just up for competition, you know, and you might not like, you might not always play the same ninth guy every night.
Might be matchup dependent
because I'm just seeing, it just feels like a lot of work, man. Like even like if you're playing 2K and you're trying to run a 10-man rotation, you're probably subbing like every single stoppage in play just to rotate guys in and make sure guys are getting their run. So I just can't help but wonder. I know I was an advocate for the 10-man rotation. Watching it in practice, I'm wondering if you have to just maybe have a guy that's an odd man out from night to night, and that's not fair. That sucks for whoever that is, but you know. Clearly, I don't have much courage of my convictions here because I'm flip-flopping like crazy. But, like, I don't know. What do you think?
I think you're right. I think it's, again, an example of just how difficult. Like, I think it's very easy for people to just say, oh, like...
Hard job coaching.
Yeah, commenting on rotations and stuff like that. Because, like, I definitely would like Dean Wade to play more than he has. Like, I think that he's been really impactful, and I think... From a rotation standpoint, he's one of the most matchup proof players that we have coming in off the bench. And, you know, I get it tonight. Caris LeVert played so well, and Donovan's out there, you know, trying to refine his footing. When Caris gets 28 minutes, that's going to make it harder for Isaac to get minutes, even though Isaac, I thought, was very good in his 18 minutes. Makes sense that he was down to 18. But when you look at 7 minutes for Dean Wade and six for Sam Merrill, it does get a lot simpler if you can just kind of combine those minutes and everybody coming in off the bench kind of gets 15 apiece, right? Like, and especially like if you go down to nine, I think it is easier to, you know, get to a lineup like Donovan, Isaac, Struess, Wade, and Allen, because, all right, if you're only having nine guys, then you're going to have some overlap. Like, maybe Isaac is the bridge player to that DG Mobley lineup, right? So that you have the defense out there with Niang and you're able to do that, versus if you're doing 10 man and you basically have two units that you're rolling out, because that's what it's been, right? Like, it's Donovan with Allen, Darius with Mobley, Niang's usually, like, it's a lot of the same guys in both of those pairings. If you're doing 10 men and you're doing two units, in order to have that starting lineup play together, that means you're going to have Darius out there with Sam Merrill, Caris LeVert, George Niang, and Evan Mobley. I don't think that's a great five-man unit. And if
you better score.
If you're going 10-man rotation and those are your pairings, that's what it would have to be. So I don't
think... That group has to be great on offense. That's for damn sure.
Right. So I think it's not that straightforward. It's not that easy because you can't... Honestly... I'll just flat out say it. I don't think you can do a 10-man rotation and play that old starting lineup together. There's just not enough minutes in the game, and it's just impossible to do those pairings. So it makes sense. I would like to see it, but I think it would actually it would require shortening the rotation a little bit.
Yeah, it's these are the tough jobs that, like, you know, they you know, you talk to players, and they say JB is a great communicator about this kind of stuff. He doesn't lie to you. He shoots it straight and just kind of tells you. He kind of just tells you what needs to happen, and, you know, and expects you to be a professional. And, like, But these are the challenges, and these are why you have a coach that can communicate to guys, because these are the kind of thing we've literally seen Cavs teams where you've lost guys and they and you can't get them back.
Yeah.
When they get benched. So like this is not easy stuff. This is people's livelihoods. These are, you know, these are, you're playing against people's expectations. So it's again, as I said before, or as Evan and Darius were coming back, if surviving the stretch without them was a test of the team's culture, thriving with everyone back and keeping everyone happy and well fed,
yeah,
is perhaps an even tougher test.
Yeah, and I just think if you were to go 9 and everyone's kind of getting their 15 minutes coming in off the bench, I think it's easier to get into, like, feel comfortable with the game, right? Like, you know that you're going to be guaranteed another shift. All right, like, I'm not going to go out there and make a couple mistakes. Like, Dean Wade, unfortunately, was out there for the big Washington run and just didn't get back into the game, right? Like, and only took one shot in the 7 minutes. I thought, you know, he was guilty of passing up some of those. But you need to have Dean playing good minutes, feeling confident because of what he can bring that nobody else brings, right? Like, he's the only guy at that length that can play 3 and D at the four position other than, you know, Evan Mobley out there, right? So I think keeping his confidence up, man, it's just so tough because even if you go 9 and you say the 9th man is going to be matchup based and like certain matchups, you know, it'll be Dean, some it'll be Sam, some it'll like maybe some Niang gets a break for a game or two, right? Like if that's the approach you're taking, if you find a groove and all of a sudden you go on a winning streak, are you able to go to that guy for a particular matchup, or you're going to stick with what's working as a team? Like all of this is so difficult. And I think that's why you just don't see a lot of teams. Like almost nobody goes that deep in a rotation. I was listening to a radio segment recently where I heard the comment that coaches go 12 deep normally in the NBA, and I couldn't stop laughing. But I think in general, you tend to see 8 or 9 more than 10 plus.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, or you just don't have 5, you know, or 4 of your 5 starters all be guys that you want to be playing 35 minutes, you know. Normally, like, the teams that can run 10 deep kind of have the Keith Bogans Memorial starter where you're starting the halves and you're barely playing the rest of the way. Like,
even a guy like don't Max. Have that. Even a guy like Max, like, if you cut it back to, okay, it's going to be 26 or 28, make sure that you stay healthy and you're ready.
Like 27 when we need a night.
But
there's
but,
still no room.
But yeah, like you do that with him and you have Caris LeVert, who's going to be in the running for sixth man of the year. You have Isaac Okoro, which if defense was actually respected in the NBA, would be in the running for sixth man of the year. Like you have 4 guys that are definitely like 34 minute per night players. And then you have 3 that are all very reliable contributors that have made a huge difference. Like, all 7 of those guys deserve serious minutes. And then you have these bench guys that can really contribute. Like, none of this is easy. I'm sitting here and I'm flabbergasted because I don't think even if I had time to like really think this through and it wasn't a question that was sprung on me, I don't think I'd have an easy answer because frankly, I don't think there is one.
No, I don't think so either. And I thought it was a really good question from Vincent because it shows that none of these things are just simple answers, you know, things that sound simple, like play good lineup, more minutes.
Like emotionally, I agree with him.
Yeah.
Like,
there's a lot of kind of spillover effects, and there are roads to doing that, but you just have to be kind of, you know, be willing to pay the toll. Gosh, I would love if we ever get JB back on the pod, if we ever get a chance to talk to him again, I really want to just be like, hey, what was harder, coaching the team when they weren't good, but you had like more, you know, was the job maybe like less complicated, you know, when the team was on the way up than it is now? And, you know, like, what are those kind of challenges? Because, you know, that you would think more talent equals easier job. But for coaching, it's like one of the only jobs where that just might not be true.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, we are going to give women meaningful beauty. And I said, that's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life.
Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
It just gets harder as you go, right? Like it's like playing a video game that learns all your tendencies. Like teams scout you harder, they play harder, and when you look like,
and you got mouths to feed, you got guys you have to play. That not only you don't just have to play for political reasons, which always is going to be a challenge in an NBA environment, but you have to play them because they're good and they've earned it.
That dang Cavs front office going out there and just bringing in so much talent.
They gotta stop finding all these
talent.
Good players.
Yeah, just bringing in all
these. Kobe's got to chill.
Yeah, Craig Porter Jr., like, God.
Come on, bro.
We haven't even got to him, and that guy is already giving, like, valuable minutes every time he steps on the court. So, yeah, it's definitely not easy, but these are going to be the type of problem solving that we'll need to see. I saw Chris Fedor, he's got an article coming out that he just teased to his subtext, talking to Donovan, just apparently Donnie was saying that, you know, still not feeling right, wasn't moving like he did, and still feeling the ill effects of his illness. But apparently he went off with some expletives about the criticism that Darius has got over this time. So I'm looking forward to reading that. But, you know, there's going to be some experimenting. Shout out to our buddy Chris Fedor, friend of the podcast. I'll always go support and read what he's got going on. But this is an important week, man. Like, you got this game against Dallas. That's going to be a litmus test team.
Hot Dallas team.
They've been playing really, really well. I know they just got blown out by Indy, but they're probably going to be coming off that loss, trying to bounce back, right, and get back to their winning form. And then you got two games, Central Division games, back-to-back where you're playing against Chicago on the road. Then you play Detroit. Now, those games might not sound really important, but from a tiebreaker standpoint, the Cavs win both of those games. They have the tiebreaker over the Milwaukee Bucks. So Cavs are already two games up in the loss column over the Bucks. You can effectively make that three if you go out there and win those games or add a game to whatever it is in the standings if you can get that tiebreaker. So as much as it is a really long season and, you know, 26 games left, getting that this early and pocketing that would be a big, big time difference maker for the Cavs.
Absolutely, man. It's going to be crucial, you know, and like there just aren't any, and that's why like pocketing a win tonight again is just so important, because you just can't give away wins right now. When you're trying to lock up the 2 seed in the Eastern Conference, a meaningful jump from last year, home court for the first 2 rounds of the playoffs, a chance to play a play-in team as opposed to a 6 seed in an increasingly competitive Eastern Conference, you know, like your reward for the 3 seed might be the Miami Heat, who are surging right now. It's not going to be easy no matter what, because the top 7 teams in the East are just bananas right now. But like you just need every edge you can get. That's why you got to go beat Chicago on the road on the second half of a back-to-back. You got to lock up this tiebreaker with Milwaukee with a win against Detroit. Just knock out stuff now. Like the difference between being one game, you know, they're 1 game up on Milwaukee right now. The difference between 1 game and 2 game and a functional 2 game lead is enormous with this much left. You know, like if you look at any of these probability models, that stuff really, really matters. Yeah. And so I really want to see this team. I think they've been playing really sluggish ball the last three games. It's okay. It's normal. It's part of the journey of the season. It's that come down that you mentioned, but like, you got to find ways to win in the mud until you get out of it, until you rediscover that verve. And I thought tonight's fourth quarter was a really good example of that.
Yeah, for sure. And I liked that, you know, the last two games they've come out of the half and they've been sharper. It's just one of those signs that they know what they need to do. It's just about executing. And, you know, they did the same thing against Orlando, but then the Magic went on their run and the Cavs never really regained control of it. Obviously, Washington is a different caliber of team, but I still think, you know, it's a positive step in the right direction that you come out of the half, you go on your run, Washington responds, and you respond right back. Like, that's the type of stuff that, you know, goes in the back of your mind, that next time you're in that situation, you have a little bit more confidence because you've been there before, you've gone out and done it. And also, I think before we wrap this thing up, should also shout out both Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. I thought Allen had a big time performance in tonight's game, you know, five assists to go along with another double double. Just there were times in the two losses where I felt like both of the bigs were a step slow defensively and, you know, just not as engaged as they have been at times. I thought that tonight was a very strong performance for both of them. Evan Mobley with five blocks, some of them just some of the most dispiriting, meanest blocks I've ever seen. It was really, really nice to see those guys go out there and contribute the way that they did. And I like to see what I really liked from Evan Mobley in this game was his assertiveness on offense. I thought he was settling for the jump shot a little bit too much in those two losses, wasn't being as aggressive. I liked seeing him attack, finishing around guys, showing that touch around the rim. That's the type of Evan Mobley that I really, really enjoy. As much as I want to see the jump shot improve, it's the assertiveness that I think levels up his game to that next level.
Yeah, as much as folk is focused on the jumper and the floor game for Mobley, the other way you beat teams playing big is you gotta mash your matchup, you know? One of the things that I think, you know, going back to that playoff series last year is Mobley wasn't able to mash someone like Julius Randle, you know, who is a true blue four. But a guy like Kyle Kuzma, that, you know, especially with the guard play the Cavs have to get him the ball with advantage, he's got to play physically, he's got to play nasty, and he's got to finish. I thought he did an amazing job of that, 9 of 11 from the field in 29 minutes. And just, you know, a lot of no-doubter finishes, because he had just bullied his way within 2-3 feet of the rim. I thought that was very, very encouraging from him. Jarrett, just a classic Jarrett game at this point, 22-12.
Five assists.
Yeah, just really, really nice. Really great defense from the two of them. And, you know, and some of those Evan blocks, by the way, helped get us out of the swamp on offense. You know, a couple of those possessions ended up being triggers for some fast break action, some pull up threes to trailers, plays.
His ability to keep the ball in play when he blocks, like he gains, the Cavs gain possession on, I'd have to guess, like 85% of Evan Mobley blocks. Like they're never going into like the fifth row or whatever. He's either catching it, he's directing it to a teammate. Like he's got that type of control in the air.
And the floor balance is just always going to be bad because you've got a couple, on those kind of rim attacks, you're always going to have a couple people flowing towards the rim to either get a board or it's the player who's putting up a shot. So like those blocks kind of turn into transition opportunities for the team, like where you're going to have two or three of the opposing team underneath their own free throw line. And again, when you are going to play the double big, you have to do everything in your power to not get sticky. You have to run into your sets. You have to pull up from three with your 3-point talent, and you have to do stuff like that. You have to make it worth your while. And I thought Evan did a really nice job of making it worth the Cavs' while to play the two of them together tonight.
Yeah, totally agree. Shout out to those guys. I think on the whole, what we've seen from Evan Mobley since he's come back from injury has been incredibly encouraging, and is obviously going to be something that we're keeping an eye on over these next 26 games. But it is a nice feeling that, you know, when things aren't necessarily going as well offensively, that you do have two elite defensive big men. You have Isaac Okoro, who's one of the best perimeter defenders in the game. You have Caris LeVert that's committing on that end. Darius and Donovan both try very hard on that end and do their part. It's nice to have that as something you can fall back on, because like, as frustrating as that Sixers loss was, it was very Knicks-y in a lot of ways, where yeah, they hit some daggers kind of late in the game, but they only put up a 106 offensive rating. Like, the Cavs did their part defensively. They just missed free throws, they missed layups, and they missed open threes. If you took one of those out of the equation, if they missed layups and they missed threes, but they hit their free throws, they win the game. If they hit layups, but they missed their free throws and threes, they'd win the game, right? Like, it's just one of those frustrating games. And I remember conversation recently had with Keith Smith, where he was mentioning talking to executives who they said, you know, an NBA season, it's 80 games. You're going to have 10 where you can do nothing wrong. You're going to have 10 where you can do nothing right. And the seasons are really defined by how you perform in those 60 in the middle. You know, I think some of these games kind of fall in that category where, you know, good finishers are missing layups, they're missing free throws. We know that this team can execute better than they have. Let's just see if they continue that trend of playing better when they play better teams, because they're going to have a real test against Dallas. And then, as we mentioned, those two games against the Central Division. We will be back after that Chicago game. Big thanks to everyone that tuned in live. Make sure you like and subscribe. Click notification bell so you know when we're going live. If you're listening via podcast and you want to support us, leave us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of Chasedown's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of the review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Until next time, go Cavs.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Tired of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.